Hello and welcome to this week's podcast of Politics in the Pulpit, a lectionary-based preaching resource designed to ask the provocative questions of how politics could appear in our preaching this week. My name is Jackie Embry. I'm a newly retired United Reformed Church minister. I have worked with churches across Birmingham and Bolton and Salford, and as moderator of the United Reformed Church's Mersey Synod. I'm now living in Kendal on the edge of the Lake District. Each week I'm joined by a different guest, and today I'm very pleased to introduce Tinny MacDonald. Tinny is director of the religion think tank Theos. She's a regular writer and media commentator on issues of religion in public life, race and gender. And she's the author of God is Not a White Man and Other Revelations, and the upcoming Unmaking Mary, the Myth of Divine Motherhood. So, Tinny, thank you very much for being with us this week. It's lovely to see you. Can I start by asking you, do politics and the pulpit mix?
I absolutely think that they do. For me, it is a no-brainer. I think because if I think about the Christian faith, I think about the thousands of years of people who have thought deeply about their faith and how it should be lived out within their communities, within their societies, within the kind of political powers that be. I think Christianity is ultimately about human flourishing. It's about what it is to be human. It's about how we live together well, and also gives us many examples of how we don't live together well. So I think that they absolutely do mix the pulpit and politics. I'm really interested in this question often from the other point of view, as someone who engages in religion within the public sphere. So the question that I often get is, should the pulpit be in politics at all? So there's a lot of conversation about, I guess, the Church of England and kind of bishops engaging in political issues. But I think that we are richer for these people who think deeply about what it is to be human. I also think that I do understand, though, why people might be a bit nervous about politics in the pulpit. There are also many examples, as well as the kind of positive ones, of the ways in which religion has been abused from positions of power from the pulpit itself, the ways in which religious ideas, Christian ideas have been used to say that some people are in or some people are out, or some people are worthy of dignity and some people aren't. But ultimately, I love the ways in which, if we look at the kind of history of how people motivated by their faith have engaged with scripture and spoken from the pulpit about issues of social justice, kind of thinking about the civil rights movement, all of the ways in which people engage, I think they absolutely do mix and we're better for it.
How do you stop then the difficulty of being, if you like, 10 feet above contradiction when you're in the pulpit? Can we carry on the conversation afterwards, so to speak?
That is an interesting conversation about the power. When you are speaking, you can't really be interrupted, although in my church we're a bit more casual, so sometimes people do interrupt, and there is some of that is quite healthy, the kind of the challenge. And as someone who kind of, you know, regularly speaks at churches, the conversation often does continue afterwards. People often might tell me that they disagreed with something that I said, and I think that's absolutely the case. The problem comes when people might, I think there needs to be a humility from the pulpit as well. It's not that we have necessarily more wisdom and are closer to God than other people, but we've kind of wrestled with some of these ideas and should be open to challenge. The problem also is when things might become kind of small p political, kind of particularly pushing forward certain political parties or ideas. And we've seen that in many places, including in the US.
Yeah, absolutely. So some headlines that reflect our context today. It was the UK budget last week, and there are concerns that it was not good news for the poorest in society. Over 280 school children have been abducted from a school in northwest Nigeria amongst ongoing unrest and instability in recent months. Violence and political turmoil in Haiti is still increasing, with people fleeing their homes because of gang violence in Port-au-Prince. This ongoing conflict in Israel-Palestine, Ukraine, Myanmar, Sudan, Nigeria, Haiti, Yemen, Venezuela, and other places. Ramadan began yesterday, Sunday the 10th of March, and ends on Monday the 8th of April, amid concerns about Gazans beginning Ramadan with starvation increasing. And good news for UK pubs and their communities. Communities are coming together to save local pubs, with the number of community-owned pubs in the UK increasing by 62.2% in the last 5 years. Church-wise, this coming Sunday, 17th of March, is the fifth Sunday in Lent, and March is Women's History Month. The lectionary readings for Sunday the 17th of March are Jeremiah 31, 31 to 34, Hebrews 5, 5 to 10, John 12, 20 to 33, and Psalm 51, 1 to 12. So, Chinny, if you're in the pulpit this week, where would you start?
So the first thing for me to say is I come from a kind of Christian tradition where we don't use the lectionary. So we tend to be, I've grown up in the kind of evangelical church. I go to a kind of open evangelical church now. And there is a sense of the kind of more of the individual within these church contexts. So I love, first of all, in my engagement with churches who do use the lectionary, this idea that we are all grappling with the same passages at this particular point in history, or, you know, in this particular week where there are these particular stories in the news. So I start with kind of thinking about the context that we are in, as might be as a congregation, but also the context of the passage. But before I get there, I am a journalist by training. I studied theology, but then I kind of trained as a journalist. And for me, when engaging with some of these texts and speaking to an audience, I go back to the kind of essence of local journalism, which is when you write a story, it's about the what's happening, to whom, when, and then the kind of finer details later on. So I think about the context in which we're in as a people, but also the context in which the passages were being written. How might they have been understood to people at the time? What are the particular interesting things that we can draw out that might speak to us today? But there's also kind of, aside from the specific, it's the kind of taking a step back and thinking about the kind of longer kind of narrative arc that leads us to these particular passages. But the challenge for me often in speaking, particularly when you kind of have readings that span, you know, the breadth of the Bible, is what is on the minds of the people hearing it that I'm speaking to today? What have they heard in the news? I think sometimes we overestimate people's understanding of the whole narrative arc and the history of the Bible passages. So I kind of try and draw people's attention to that, but recognizing that they might not have the bandwidth to understand all of the context. So I would start with thinking about the kind of the long kind of narrative arc of the biblical story, the context in which we are in as a congregation, but also specifically this week. And then I would look at what might spark my attention. I'm a news junkie, really. I part of my role is to think about how we can apply kind of Christian ideas, Christian tradition, scripture to what is happening today. So often the things that I'm thinking about are what is happening today, the conversations that I've had in the public sphere conversations or the stories that I've read in the news. So I start from, so it's all about stories, really, kind of long stories, kind of contemporary stories, and the story of the people that I'm speaking to.
I guess the Bible's full of stories, and a lot of them set in difficult circumstances, at difficult times. Does that help in terms of when we're looking at a really quite difficult set of news at the moment, with a lot of conflict around the world, and perhaps that conflict feeling like it's touching a bit nearer to home than it has done for many years, with conflict within Europe, and conflict in what we call the Holy Land?
Yes, I think what this week's readings speak to me about are hope despite suffering. So the context, if we think about what's in the news at the moment, if we think about Gaza, or the issue of kind of what's happening in northern Nigeria, these are long, these are conflicts with long histories in which there are people suffering on kind of either side of the news story. And if I think about the Jeremiah passage, these are people who are in exile, for whom this kind of this new covenant that God makes with them is absolutely a story of hope. And maybe it might have seemed unbelievable in some way, this kind of pointing to something that you can't yet experience. So in this week's speaking, I might think about what it's like to be someone in Gaza today, and God speaking to you about a hope that you can't yet touch, or it doesn't feel hopeful, it feels painful, it feels like you're forgotten. So I think about this Jeremiah passage and God saying, the days are coming when I will make a new covenant, and it won't be like what's come before, that it will be new. And it speaks of God's kind of almost persistence and continuity, despite the kind of various failings that the people might have had before, how God still has a promise for us, despite those circumstances. Because I think a lot about kind of racial justice and prejudice and oppression, I'm often thinking about it's kind of an obvious allusion to Israelites in exile, having been in bondage. These passages that were taken out of the Bible for slaves, because it would have given them this idea that God is one who might free you from this kind of this exile or this oppression, this bondage. And I love stories of hope within coming kind of these dark and oppressive times. So I think about enslaved people who would gather in hush harbors. And these were kind of spaces nestled under trees where on a Sunday, the enslaved people might be allowed to go and kind of meet together. And there they would read about this God who would free them. They absolutely believed in God despite their kind of current circumstances, despite still being in chains. And I love this kind of this idea of hope. But it's also this kind of the sense of God's mercy. And if I think about Gaza as well at the moment, I just want mercy for the people who are suffering. It is relentless. I can't imagine what they must be feeling like. I can't imagine the terror that they must feel, and you just want to say, can you, you know, just give them a break. And the passage in the kind of the passage in Hebrews, we understand God to be someone who doesn't stand aside from that suffering. And it feels sometimes glib to say that, but the whole point of the incarnation is that God doesn't just leave us alone in our kind of misery and the violence and the oppression, but God becomes like us and understands what it is to suffer. So those are some of the things that are kind of in my mind as I kind of reflect on some of these passages.
It's really hard stuff, as you say. It's very difficult to imagine what it's like if you can't feed your children, if you can't even stay in your house in safety, never mind go out your house in safety.
Yeah.
So, but I guess that's what a lot of folk in Jeremiah's time were experiencing as well.
Yeah.
What about the psalm, which, you know, speaking of forgiveness, it's mercy both inside and out, so to speak, where we've got things wrong as well as where we're suffering from other outside agencies, so to speak.
Yeah, this is obviously a very well-known, and I found it really moving kind of reading through this again, this sense of failure, like, you know, individual failure to live up to to being who the people that we want to be. So this kind of sense of failure, but yet knowing that there is grace and that God promises mercy for us. But I think that there is something about this recognition of the part that we play in the brokenness around us. So it can be easy to think, you know, when it comes to kind of climate change, climate catastrophe, or global injustice, that it's not us. I mean, I didn't do it. I'm all right. But yeah, you start to realize that the ripples that go from the individual, you know, how do I love my family, my husband? How do I love my community? How do I demand from those who are in power justice and mercy for the people who I don't meet on a daily basis, who might be in Gaza or who might be in northern Nigeria or who might be on the front line of climate change and climate catastrophe today? So this sense of this kind of recognition of our individual sin that kind of collectively leads to the corporate sin that we see around us. But yet, even in that, there is this conversation, isn't there? You know, the Psalms are about this kind of not trying to pretend that everything is okay, that we are good. We have a relationship with God that allows us to be able to say, please have mercy on me. I am a sinner. I am unclean. There's recognition that within that, God sees us, sees our brokenness, and yet is someone who we know is able to give us the mercy that we ask for. So yeah, the brokenness. I thought it was also interesting the John passage, the Hebrews passage, where we read about kind of Jesus's real humanity. Like, Jesus understands what it is to be human. Is not kind of, you know, set apart from us in that way, not just kind of this high priest, but there's talk of Christ's fervent cries, prayers, petitions, reverent submission, and that, you know, we're in the period of Lent, and we know that Jesus suffered the most horrific pain imaginable, And we look ahead to Easter and that remembering Christ's suffering. I'm remembering that Christ doesn't stand apart from that suffering, but understands it himself.
And all that also seems to speak of hope, of the possibility of there being a way through the suffering. And also, if we can get things right, perhaps as individuals, we can do something to help the world move in a more positive direction.
Yeah, it's the paradox of Easter, isn't it? The kind of walking through the pain and the suffering, and yet holding intention that suffering still happens, death still happens, but there is a greater hope to come. There is this idea of God's kingdom coming, in which everything will be made right. But it doesn't feel like that right now. It doesn't feel like we can even imagine what that must be like. So there's me, I live sitting in Southeast London, not being able to imagine that. And yet I think about how laughable potentially that idea might be if you are in Gaza, mm-hmm. if you've just been kidnapped in northern Nigeria. And yet that is what God promises to us, and all of this made possible through Christ's suffering and death, but also the resurrection that comes at the end of it.
Would you touch on the John passage, or is there too much in the rest?
No. There's something that struck me on in this, which is about the hour has come, where it's almost like this, right, now is the time. What we've been waiting for. So Jesus says, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. And I think about timings of things. So I was thinking about Esther and this idea of, you know, for such a time as this, like it's not, there might be times when we are called to speak up or act in some way. There might be for some of us a sense that something is coming, but it's not yet. And that kind of the revelation of God when that time comes is something that I think many people have experienced. So for me, in that passage, this idea of the timing, and again speaking to the, you know, the hope that is to come. It's the now and the not yet. It's the what understanding a sense of God's timing. Which is both now and not yet, and how do we have hope and look ahead to hope despite the current circumstances that we find ourselves in?
I mean, that idea about the timing is very interesting, because a lot of people say they can understand the journey that God's brought them on only in retrospect. When they see the significance of parts of the journey that they couldn't see at the time.
Yeah. I think that's so often. I think particularly in my work and my kind of sense of calling, there are lots of decisions that I made, kind of paths that I took, I could have turned right or left, that at the time think that they are just decisions. But it's only might only be years later where you kind of reflect that actually that's what brought you to a certain place. And within that, you know, we as people who are constrained by time, how amazing it is to think about a God who is eternal, never changing, for whom it's all kind of, I don't know, it's all happening at the same time, or it's not happening at the same time, or however we want to understand it. There is a sense of a hope that comes from knowing that God is eternal and it isn't constrained by time like we are.
Absolutely. Are there other things that you want to bring out of those readings before we wrap up?
I think about the kind of the new covenant idea. I think it's really important that when we are speaking to congregations, that we, as I said at the start, we make things understandable and tangible. And you know, that the passage references, because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them. I think about marriage, and I think about a way to understand. You know, the biggest promise that I've ever made is to my husband. But there is, I kind of joke with him about, we've been married for 8 years, coming up to 8 years, coming up to 9 years. And for years I've spoken about our vow renewals. Like, I would love to have basically a second wedding at our 10th anniversary. And within the Jeremiah passage, we know that God has time and time again made promises to Israel. And whatever happens in between those, you know, that the failures of both individuals and the kind of the collective, God still promises. And it's almost like this renewal of vows, this kind of saying, okay, I'm still here. This marriage that kind of, at 10 years is very different from what has come before, from the vows that we made at the start of our marriage. But yeah, I am still with you. So I think helping people to understand, whether they are married or not, this idea of covenant, vows, but also the change in nature of the kind of the renewals of it, that really helped me as a way into understanding what that passage meant, that relationship between God and God's people.
I think that's really helpful, because that new covenant and the writing on your heart, and not needing a teacher because it's innate, is so brilliant, but yet not yet attained.
Yeah, I think I, as well, kind of in reading that passage, I referenced, I'd grown up in circles where there was very much this binary between the Old Testament and the New Testament, where in the Old Testament, you had to obey these laws. They were kind of, it was very regimented, judgmental. You were kind of following a series of things, and that was what salvation meant. But in this passage, I think we see God's grace towards the people. It's not just about, it was never about just following rules. It was about God's relationship with us. But yet there is something different again in the, I'll put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. There is something new in that, but yet there is that, that continuity, because God has said it before. You know, this has all kind of happened before. But yeah, so it's not just about rules versus grace. There is grace. There's always been grace between God and God's people.
Absolutely. Without that grace, we're nowhere. Yeah. Jenny, thank you very much indeed. It's been lovely talking with you, and I'm sure your wisdom and reflections will really help others in their preaching this Sunday. And thanks to all of you for joining us to ask whether or how we should preach politics from the pulpit this week. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts and share this episode with your friends. We also have online spaces for further engagement and discussion about faith and politics on X or Twitter, at Public Issues, or using hashtag Politics in the Pulpit. We have a Facebook group, which you can access through the Joint Public Issues Team's Facebook page, and the website jpit.uk, that's jpit.uk. Let's go into both our politics and our pulpits with a prayer based on one written for the United Reformed Church's prayer handbook by Anne Sanderson. Covenanting God, you made promises to unlikely people looking to an uncertain future. You have shown us that you are true. Your promises live on, written on our hearts. Your words are eternal, never to be lost. In a world where words come and go, where promises are forgotten or broken, we praise you for your faithfulness. Open our hearts, that we will live as your people of promise, with your word written on our hearts, praising your name by our actions. Covenant God, who dwells in the depth of our being. Amen.